In this series of sermons, we've been exploring the stories of the book of Genesis, which are the stories of the early families of our faith tradition. Listen for the word of the Lord as it comes to us from Genesis chapter 37 as we continue hearing more, not this morning so much about Jacob as about his children. The word of the Lord. Jacob settled in the land where his father had lived as an alien, the land of Canaan. This is the story of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flock with his brothers. He was a helper to the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he had made him a long robe with sleeves. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him. They could not speak peaceably to him. Once Joseph had a dream. When he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream that I dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Suddenly, my sheaf rose and stood upright. Then your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to have dominion over us?" And they hated him even more because of his dreams and his words. He had another dream and told it to his brothers, saying, "Look, I had another dream. The sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What kind of dream is this that you have had? Shall we indeed come, I and your mother and your brothers, and bow to the ground before you?" So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers went to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I'll send you to them." He answered, "Here I am." So he said to him, "Go now. See if all is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring word back to me." So he sent him from the valley of Hebron. He came to Shechem, and a man found him wandering in the fields. And the man asked him, "What are you seeking?" He said, "I'm seeking my brothers." He said, "Please tell me where they are pasturing the flock." The man said, "They have gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from a distance, and before he came near to them, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we shall say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams." Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers agreed. When some Midianite traders passed by, they drew Joseph up, lifting him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. One does wonder where it all begins. Here we have the story of Israel. Now, we've been hearing about Israel, about Jacob, for the last couple of weeks. And it's interesting in this story. You remember last week he was blessed with a new name as he wrestled with God, and one that would give him a new beginning. But here in this story, he's called by both names because they're not quite clear if he has really been redeemed and entered into that new identity that God had given to him. Clearly, he had some issues. You see him playing favorites, and you see him starting out there, giving his youngest son this tailor-made jacket, I think with stitched-in lettering on the back that read, "World's Best Son." Okay? I think this is the Michael Scott of fathers from The Office there. World's best son, a favoritism is going on here. Clear signs of unchecked favoritism toward the darling young son. So maybe it starts with Jacob, with Israel. And then there's Joseph. Joseph's 17 years old. Of 12 sons, he's the second youngest, and he has this sense that his role is to be self-appointed special assistant to the father. Not that his father asked for this, but Joseph comes up with a chart of all the duties that his brothers were supposed to take care of, and Joseph goes down the checklist with a red pen and informs his father they are not doing very well. Joseph, sometimes I think the theological term for a guy like that is a jerk, right? And then he has a couple of dreams. And in the morning after he dreams, he starts to shoot his mouth off about the dreams, as if to say, I saw 12 corn stalks and your corn stalks were all bowing down to my corn stalk. Isn't that interesting? He's totally unself-aware that words have consequences. He's arrogant. He may have a special grace, but he has no understanding of how to deal with the power of this grace. He has no sense of the responsibility that comes with what he's been given. So he boasts and brags. He will have to learn. But then you do stop and think about his role in the family, don't you? Being on the younger end of the family, what power does a 17-year-old have with these older brothers and brothers that stories in the Bible indicate they could be a brutal lot? How does a 17-year-old deal with older, experienced, powerful, brutal brothers? Well, what this story tells us is he does have one power that they don't have. He has the power to dream. And in his dream, it changes the world. What was it Freud said about dreams? Dreams are often the most profound when they seem the most crazy. This is a crazy dream, but crazy good. An anticipation of a new day, a new beginning, a new world. When his brothers saw that he was the favorite, they hated him, the Bible says. And to make clear that we don't miss the point, the story repeats at least 4 times. They hated this guy. They see him coming in the distance, and they're talking together, and they're inciting one another to more and more violence. And finally, they say, here comes this dreamer, let's kill him. Well, they end up talking themselves down. They talk themselves down, but you can see right there that they do not want this dream. And they start thinking, well, the best way to kill the dream is to kill the dreamer. And they begin to conspire to make that happen. And again, they're inciting one another. But then as they step back just a little bit, you have stories of a couple of the brothers and how they're thinking about it. You have Reuben. Reuben knows what's right. Reuben is just too afraid to stand up and say it to the crowd. So he reverts to deception. He wants to be a hero, but deep down he does love his brother. Deep down he's connected to the dreamer and therefore probably to the dream. But Reuben is afraid. Simply put, Reuben's a coward who won't stand up to the crowd. Second, we have Judah, another older brother. This is apparently the strongest brothers in this mob of brothers. And he starts to think, well, maybe he could manage this situation. He tells them, well, we can't kill him. We'd be murderers. We'd have his blood on our hand. But we can't have him hanging around trying to change things either. That is unacceptable. Here is a way to get rid of the dreamer and the dream without having blood on our hands. We'll sell him to slave traders for 20 pieces of silver. He's trying to manage the dream. The brothers believe that life can be administered against the dream. They hate their brother over the love of their father, and they sell out both brother and father in that one act. Now, Joseph is going to have more stories, more travails, more challenges. And what all those stories in the Bible are saying is, God may give you a dream, but that dream doesn't come easy or cheap. You may have a dream, but it's naive to think that everybody will simply change just because you have a good idea. The dream here is an image of hope. And it shows that quite often in the world, it seems that the deck is stacked against hope. So how do hopers hope when the dream is taken away? Dreams are fragile. dreamers can be lost. But what's fascinating about this story is the subtlety of the Bible. Because what it's trying to tell us is that on the one hand, dreams don't come easy. There are all sorts of challenges, but don't give up hope. Don't be naive, but don't be cynical. There is another way. There's an unspoken force in this story, and that is the one who gives the dreams. The unspoken character in this story is God. It implies that dreams come from God and that the dreams of God are stronger than the brother's resolve to stay in hopelessness. The dream may be delayed, but it will not be denied, and it may take a long, long time, but the dreams of God will come. It's an amazing story because in our world, we're so impressed by power, by acts of power, by all the acts of jealousy and hate, the ways that the world seems to be stacked against hope. It all seems to be so concrete, so earthly, so strong in comparison to wispy things like dreams. But in the world of faith, the dreams, provided they're the dreams of God, are what have the long-term power. Now you look at this story, you study this story, and you realize this is a very political passage. It's the beginning of a nation. But in the beginning of the nation, they have to decide how they are going to organize things. Joseph stands for a new day, a new way. The brothers stand for a bunch of tribes, all protecting their own, standing against one another, and in fact, ending up inciting one another to kill one another. But there's another way beyond tribalism in God's world. The brothers stand for the temptation of humanity to engage in a systematic hopelessness. But there are dreams that cannot be resisted, and that's what the brothers find out long term. This family, this nation, as it is imaged in this story in the Bible, will not be reduced to the way things were. It won't be rationalized or managed or manipulated or fall prey to power plays. This is a vision of the world, not about an individual alone or a tribe alone. It is a vision of a new world, the dreams of God that permit the imagining of new possibilities, not just for families, but new political possibilities. Dreams that are a threat to the brothers and that call the way things are into question, that call their world into question, and it incites hatred to bring a dream into their world, and the hatred can escalate and become murderous. But the dream lives on. It anticipates an end to the violence, an end to the present order. It's a voice that is saying the way things are is not the way that God intends them to be. Oscar Wilde had a quote one time. He said, "Half the time we walk around in the dark, but the dreamer sees the dawn before anyone else." Here you have in this story Joseph seeing the dawn while everyone else is in the dark. And what does this story say to us? I think part of how stories like this in the Bible can be helpful for us on our spiritual journey is for us to ask ourselves, what role are we playing in the story? Are we playing one of the brothers? Are we trying to manipulate things to keep things the way they are? Are we doing some sort of power play? Are we cowardly in the face of the dream that God is dreaming for us? Or are we like the father, brokenhearted because he thinks that all hope is lost? Or are we in the role of Joseph, keeping the dream alive for days and months and years and decades? Are we keeping that dream alive even in the greatest challenges of our lives in this story? Joseph ends up going to prison later on, right? And yet the dream lives in the dark. Are we in the role of Joseph bearing the dream and keeping the dream alive? T.E. Lawrence said, "All people dream, but not equally. Those who dream by night in the dusty recesses of their minds wake in the day to find that it was vanity. But the dreamers of the day are dangerous, for they may act on their dreams with open eyes to make them possible." So what dream is God dreaming over us? What promise is God guarding on our behalf? The world can be different. The world can be made anew. The world can be made anew where brothers don't dominate brothers with violence. Goethe once said, "Dream no small dreams, for they have no power to move the hearts of men." And I think that's right. This dream that Joseph is given is a dream for all humanity. And so the question is, are we keeping that dream alive of a new beginning for humanity? When someone sees you, do they say, "Here comes that dreamer"? Because against all appearances, the power plays and conspiracies, the hatred and the violence of the brothers, and all of their tribalism will fall. Because God is dreaming a dream over you and me and over all the world. Because a new world can be born. A new creation is coming. Wait for it. Work for it. God is keeping that dream. Do your part to keep the dream alive. Do your part to make that dream possible. Amen.